This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hey, you're listening to the Bite Size Business Breakfast, everything Tom, Serena and myself have been up to Tuesday, July the 13th. This morning, that included quite a spirited debate about the delivery industry, our messaging lines heating up on the back of the RTA releasing a new 17-page list of guidelines and regulations for the guys on bikes and the people who employ them. Our messaging lines lit up with your messages, particularly around whose responsibility it really was to keep everybody safe. Was it the drivers themselves? Was it the companies who employ them, or the companies that employ the companies that employ them? Or was it indeed us? Did we have a role to play in terms of our expectations for getting everything faster and cheaper? We've been speaking to the men behind two companies that deliver things. One of those was Ian Ohan from Crush Brands. They are the Freedom Pizza people and they do their own delivery. The other was Ravi Tharoor from Ghibli. That's a last mile company that will take care of the delivery for other firms. We're going to hear from both of them in the next hour. Plus, we have been talking data, the guys from Dubizzle, and having a look at what house prices are doing. Plus, Serena Kelly, as always, knows where you can fly and what you need to do to get there.
Ask Serena.
About to say Richard Dean, but he is missing somewhere in Montenegro. Serena Kelly, good morning.
Morning. Morning, guys.
Morning. Yes, you.
I'm like juggling several balls right now in the air.
Oh, we all are. Trust me. I've got a WhatsApp going with both hands, one on the laptop and one on the phone. I didn't know it was possible, but you can actually send two messages at once. Who knew?
Yes, you can. Yep.
Right. Cases and vaccine numbers, please.
Okay. So this time last week, you were looking at new cases, 1,573. That's after more than 239,300 tests. Yesterday, after more than 238,000 tests were conducted, they announced 1,542 new cases of COVID-19 in the country. They also announced 1,519 recoveries, 4 fatalities, and your active cases currently up from 20,064 to 20,083. When it comes to vaccine distribution, more than 15.9 million doses have been administered in the country so far. And you've got 66% of the UAE population now fully vaccinated. 75.7% of the population have received one dose.
Right. Let's talk flights, because we have an extension to the extension of the suspension.
Of the extension. Emirates Airline has extended the suspension of passenger flights from India, Pakistan, Bangladesh and Sri Lanka until July 21st. It was July 15th. It has now been extended. The carrier said the decision is in line with the UAE government directives, added that passengers who've connected through these four countries in the last 14 days will not be accepted to travel from any other point to the UAE. You do have the exempt categories, as I've mentioned many times, UAE nationals. If you're a holder of a UAE golden visa, you're a part of a diplomatic mission. But of course, there are full details up on the ARN News Centre app.
Right. There was a WHO presser last night. Tom's been looking at the fashion statements that various gentlemen have been making in it.
Really?
Not really. I mean, that's just...
What, ties, jackets?
No, I was just interested that... which one's this one, the WHO one?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I was just interested that Dr. Tedros, who's usually very, very slick, and, you know, he's a man that wears his suits and his ties and his shirts very well indeed. The man that's been under a huge amount of pressure over the last 18 months, obviously, come into our sort of everyday consciousness. Who knew who Dr. Tedros was before COVID and the pandemic hit? And I just noticed that the last press briefing, the top button was undone. The tie was done. The top button was undone. And I didn't know if that was just to do with the stress that he was under at the moment
or
not.
Just that he forgot to do the top button.
You can never forget.
Really? Yeah. Yeah. That's because I'm not a guy.
You'll be very well aware of whether it's not done
when
or not.
When it's open. Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
You feel like you're flying low.
It's not, button undone. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Well, what I took from the presser...
I took, obviously... A lot more than that. It was just an observation and an aside.
As Tom rightly said.
Don't get us on Boris Johnson and his three lines T-shirt over the shirt.
I heard you talking about that earlier. It's just like, and we need a haircut.
It's not a fashion choice. I'm not even sure what that is.
No. Well, as Tom rightly said, Dr. Tedros Ghebreyesus, Director General of the WHO, he was speaking at yesterday's press conference. He opened up by setting the scene of where the world is at the moment when it comes to COVID-19. I do have a clip for you.
Last week marked the fourth consecutive week of increasing cases of COVID-19 globally, with increases recorded in all but one of WHO's six regions. And after 10 weeks of declines, deaths are increasing again. The Delta variant is ripping around the world at a scorching pace. Not everywhere is taking the same hit, though. We're in the midst of a growing two-track pandemic where the haves and have-nots within and between countries are increasingly divergent.
He spoke about the countries with sufficient amounts of vaccine supplies and those who don't. It continued by saying the global gap in vaccine supplies is very uneven. Countries are already onto ordering doses for booster jabs when the priority should be providing extra doses to the COVAX initiative for those who still haven't even had one dose. There are still health workers across the globe who are not inoculated, and it's important now more than ever with the variants.
Delta is now in more than 104 countries, and we expect it to soon be the dominant COVID-19 strain circulating worldwide. My message today is that we are experiencing a worsening public health emergency that further threatens lives, livelihoods, and a sound global economic recovery. The current collective strategy reminds me of a firefighting team taking on a forest blaze. Hosing down part of it might reduce the flames in one area, but sparks will eventually travel and grow again into a roaring furnace.
Yeah, he went on to say the world should be battling together to put out that inferno. I mean, when he's referring to the Delta variant being sort of present in more than 100 countries across the globe now, I mean, UAE authorities already said it is present here. It is probably the second predominant variant. I believe Beta is the one that's leading the way there. But yeah, it's just something that we need to be wary of, that there are still countries here. You do have the luxury of being able to choose a vaccine or get an appointment readily available, even though there may be somewhat of a bit of a delay. But I still feel that we need to remember how grateful we should be that we are somewhat better off than a lot of other countries.
You make a point. When the dinner party conversation is, oh, I'm not sure about the Pfizer, should I get the Sinopharm? I don't know. Yep. The older technology might be, the fact that we're even able to have that
luxury
discussion.
Yep.
And then to be talking, as you say, about booster shots is a privilege indeed. And what Dr. Tedros says there, we are certainly seeing a spike in cases around the world. 47% spike in confirmed cases in the US in the last week. It is the largest rise since April 2020. And we've got Indonesia posting a record one-day rise as well in the last couple of hours. Who else is joining the queue there when it comes to reporting new numbers? Singapore speaking to people in the karaoke industry. Interesting.
They've been talking about Australia, saying that possible lockdown in Sydney, I know we've mentioned yesterday already, could possibly be extended again. It's supposed to be lifted on Friday, but they're saying the Delta variant just seems to be spreading and they need to be careful.
Right. And as we all are about to head off on holidays, let's look at what's happening internationally.
So a bit of an international roundup for
you. Obviously.
New Zealand, they've come out to say 13 more crew members of a fishing boat quarantined in Wellington have tested positive for COVID-19. It was two crew members of a Spanish flag deep sea fishing vessel that arrived in the country last week. All 15 affected crew have now been transferred to an onshore quarantine facility. One of the crew confirmed last week to have the Delta variant. Australia, as I was saying, they're warning Sydney residents to brace for an extended period of lockdown because they've had another record daily number of cases. It's just fueled by the Delta variant, it seems. And state officials reported 112 new locally transmitted cases on Monday.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Talking delivery this morning.
the delivery man. But I ain't order that. It's the delivery man. But I ain't order that. It's the delivery man. But I ain't order that.
On a morning that we hear that Talabat is looking to double the number of riders that it has on the UAE roads, cut delivery times to 15 minutes. We also have a new RTA handbook out this week with regulations and guidelines for the industry. It's all prompted something of a debate in the studio this morning about delivery services. We are very pleased to have a couple of people in the industry weighing in. One of them is Ian Ohan, founder and CEO of Crush Brands. That's the company behind Freedom Pizza. They are a firm that has chosen to do the delivery stuff themselves. Ian, good morning. So lovely to speak to you.
Good morning. Thank you for having me, Brandon.
Right, we've got a 17-page manual here. It covers everything from airtight containers for food deliveries to lane discipline. Why does the industry need it?
Well, I think it's a great initiative by the RTA to put forward these guidelines. And I think these are all good and positive outcomes. But frankly, they're things that the industry should be doing for itself in any case.
Like what?
Well, for example, we look at the number of delivery drivers that have been killed in the last, 12 to 18 months. You know, we hear reports from 12 to 18 delivery drivers killed, many of those during lockdown when there was nobody on the road. So I guess one of the questions that comes to mind is, you know, should delivery drivers be incentivized based on the number of deliveries that they're undertaking? In our case, we do not do that because this could be leading to some reckless driving. So there's a number of initiatives that I think the industry itself should take account for.
Drivers across Dubai, across the UAE, being incentivized by the number of deliveries?
Most of the drivers are being incentivized, especially for third-party delivery, based on the number of deliveries that they partake on a daily basis. So their compensation is directly linked to that. And if you look at things like during Ramadan, you know, the drivers were fasting all day in 50 degrees Celsius weather. And then peak period, of course, is during iftar. You know, they haven't eaten all day. They're dehydrated. And then they're asked to do, you know, an incredible amount of deliveries in a very short period of time. This is a recipe for disaster. And, in our stores, our drivers are all given iftar. We have an in-store iftar that takes place. So these are the types of things that I think the industry has to think about, especially, you know, third-party delivery drivers typically aren't employed directly. So they're employed through agencies. So it's very easy for third-party delivery to offset or wash their hands of the, I think the safety requirements that should be handed down to their drivers.
Who's responsible here? This is something we've got a bit of a debate going on this morning, whether it's the drivers themselves for bad driving, whether it's the companies that employ them, be that directly or third party, as you say, or whether it's us that we just expect everything too quick and too cheap.
Well, I think, I think it's a shared responsibility. Driving a motorbike is inherently dangerous. It's an inherently dangerous activity. Our job as employers are to ensure that we give our drivers all the safety gear. I don't see third-party companies providing safety equipment to their drivers. All of our drivers have full body armor, DOT and EEC approved helmets. They're trained, fully in hygiene, personal hygiene, food hygiene. They're trained, they're safety trained. And we have a zero tolerance policy for reckless driving. So, you know, we do our share, you know, to ensure that our drivers are as safe as they can be during this activity. And as I said, our drivers, you know, we rush in our stores, so we rely on the efficiency of our operations to ensure that our drivers don't have to drive quickly on the road.
So let's look at what is in this manual. We've got uniform requirements here to international standards. There's a lot of road rules. There's a lot of fines. What's good in it?
Well, I think, the idea of having a framework is very good. I'd like to see more emphasis on the gear that drivers are required to wear. I'm an avid motorbike rider myself, and, you know, I wouldn't have our drivers wear anything that I wouldn't wear myself or feel comfortable or safe wearing myself. And so, you know, all of our drivers have full body armor. They have safety shoes. They have, as I said, DOT and EEC approved helmets. And of course, their bikes are properly maintained. You know, and these are the bare essentials that are required with respect to driver safety. And, for us, we ensure that we do that for our drivers. If it's a very windy day, if it's rain, we shut down our delivery. I mean, it's a very costly endeavor to do that, but no delivery is worth a delivery driver's life.
What about driver training? A lot of what we're hearing this morning is people talking about the way that people are driving these bikes on the road, riding these bikes on the road.
Yeah, so we do our own driver training, and we actually developed our own driver training program with a company called RideSafe UAE. And it's, you know, it's focused more on, you know, controlling the vehicle. So it's a lot of less about, you know, what are the basic rules on the road. It's more about how to ride safely, you know. So I think you need both, of course, but the riding safely and minimizing chances of accidents and causing problems on the road. It's really about minimizing danger, and I think that's an important part that's possibly not being trained, you know, for delivery drivers here in the region.
Do we also need to take the focus off drivers, though, and look at actually the infrastructure behind it? I mean, we've got a bit of a race to zero here as we get more and more of these platforms and more competition. I mean, the amount of kitchens that people have around the place is also going to influence how quickly you can get your food. Undercutting your competitors is again going to make it harder for these guys to earn a living and therefore maybe to take more risks. Do we need to take the emphasis actually off the driver and place it on the number of kitchens, the expectations, the charges that I'm getting charged for my pizza instead?
I think that's a different discussion. When you're talking about safety, I think it's really about ensuring the drivers are trained properly, they have the right safety gear, and they're held accountable not just by the RTA, but they're also held accountable by the companies that work for them. The number of kitchens, this is a market, a free market issue, I think, and I don't think it has much to do with safety. But I do think that companies need to take account for the safety of their drivers. And they can't just pass it off on a, you know, an agency and say, well, you know, it's their problem to deal with the driver's safety. If you're a delivery company, a third-party delivery company, a third-party delivery contractor, I believe there's a strong onus on you as a company to make sure your drivers are safe.
Okay, 30 seconds before we let you go. Do we need more regulation and more penalties for the actual companies themselves?
I would like to see more done at the company level, yes. And I'm not a big fan of penalties, but but I think where when it comes to driver safety and penalizing for things that endanger the lives of drivers and other people on the road, I think I'm all for that type of regulation.
You know, Ian O'Hearn is the founder and CEO of Crush Brands. They are the company behind Freedom Pizza. They are a company that employs their drivers directly and does the delivery themselves rather than using a third-party app. We are talking about the delivery business this morning on the back of that new handbook from the RTA.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
And this morning's conversation, which is getting quite heated on the old messaging system, is about delivery.
It's the delivery man, but I ain't order that. It's the delivery man, but I ain't order that. It's the delivery man, but I ain't order that.
You know, the RTA is increasing governance of the delivery sector. It's released a new manual setting out rules and responsibility for drivers and the companies that use them. But does it all go far enough? And where does the ultimate responsibility actually lie? We are joined now by Ravi Thrall, Chief Strategy and Commercial Officer of the last mile delivery company, Jeebly. Ravi, good morning. Thanks so much for speaking
morning,
to
Ravi.
Us.
Morning, Ravi. How are you?
Now, you guys work with companies to help them with their last mile logistics. Do you want to give us a very quick idea of the type of businesses that are using you at the moment?
We cater to food, non-food, e-commerce, and other verticals that need last mile deliveries.
So you will have, presumably, like me, read this 17-page manual here, which covers everything from driver age limit, 55 the cutoff, to lane discipline. Does the industry need more rules?
Yes, Brandy. It's an important step in the right direction, and I'll expand on that. It's important because to organize, to put a structure around the delivery management process and to improve the ecosystem, we need some sort of regulation, and RTA's guidelines are very appropriate.
What's wrong with the industry at the moment, Ravi?
It's unorganized to some extent, and to bring the unorganized sector into a formal economy would be a good step.
What do you mean by unorganized?
There are lots of drivers, riders who don't fall in the organized sector. They work on visas that are not sponsored by the company. So in that sense, there's a parallel economy, and RTA has done the right thing by issuing the guidelines and bringing them into the proper economy.
Whose fault is that, though? Is that the riders or is that the companies that are using them without the proper visas?
It should be the company's responsibility. And I mean, if you look at what Careem and Uber did to the taxi industry, last mile delivery partners should be doing the same.
Which is what? Standardizing it?
More structure around the delivery management process, more structure around how they're employed and how they're trained and the service quality.
Right. So where are we at the moment? Let's talk about, well, safety has been the big discussion on our messaging system. Where are we at the moment and what needs to change?
I think RTA's training, I mean, we do our own in-house training and we take them through the training process in terms of safety and food delivery, especially with the COVID pandemic situation, hands-free or safe distances. Safety in terms of driving is very important. If you see the proliferation of bikes, cars and vans, which cater to the last mile industry, how they drive and hopefully we get to see a better structure prevail.
Are companies investing enough across the board in training?
Yes, absolutely. We have a training school within our infrastructure, and we see that RTA wants to introduce a training session, which is very welcome. And companies in similar industry are doing what they need to do.
One of the questions that we've had in this morning, I'm going to put it to you. Do you incentivize your drivers on the number of deliveries that they make or the time it takes to do them? Does that affect their pay, their tips at all?
Absolutely. We have to incentivize. If you want to improve the efficiency rates, if you want to improve their own the riders' payout, we do incentivize them.
How do you do that? Can you give me an idea of that structure?
Incentivize them. We have a structure where we pay a basic salary till a certain number of deliveries, and then we incentivize them to do more. If you look at the efficiency rates, we need to have a structure where the driver does X number of deliveries, and then the efficiency rate improves as they deliver more.
How do you make sure, though, that they're not cutting corners, driving recklessly, etc., in order to make more money?
We have the technology that we have in place and monitors every step of the delivery process. So we know how long it takes for them to reach the restaurant. We track them. There is a geo coordinates that is sent back to the system. And we know they're not driving fast because we measure the distance between the delivery pickup and drop location.
But is there not going to be a worry that people looking to earn money, and not a huge amount of it, send it home, look after their families, are going to try to push as many deliveries into as short a space as possible, and that could have an effect on safety?
Well, that's a thought process, Brandy. I mean, everybody thinks that. But we know from the experience we have for the past 4 years, we know exactly how many deliveries can be done by driving safe. So we encourage our riders and drivers to do what is required to drive safe and be safe.
What about the uniforms, which is something that this handbook addresses, safety in terms of the gear that the riders are wearing? Are we doing enough about that, and what needs to happen?
Yes, we are. We are constantly looking at how we can improve their uniforms and sort of add to the safety measure in terms of knee guards, elbow guards, gloves, and the quality of the fabric that goes into the uniform.
And we've got a couple of questions coming in for you, and I thank you for being here to answer them. Someone's asking, what is the basic pay for one of your drivers?
We're looking at about, if you look at base pay in $3,500 to $4,000 range plus incentives. We have riders and drivers making a very good number by the end of the month.
And how much can the incentives increase that pay? Double it?
You can double it.
Someone else asking, do the drivers get to keep their tips?
Yes, they do.
Someone else asking about, could you define the training? Is it just a one-off or is it continuous? How often do your drivers actually get trained?
Bring them in. It's a continuous process. Sorry to cut you off. We bring them in on a monthly basis, depending on their performance. If they're performing well, then we do every quarter. We bring them into the training room, explain to them what it is that we've seen across the board. Give them the information, give them the service quality levels that we expect them to do. So it's a continuous process. It's not a one-off once a year training session.
If they're doing well, so is it just the top performers who get the extra training?
No. I'm talking about top performers getting less training and low performers getting more training.
Okay. Before we let you go, and I've just got 1 minute left with you, unfortunately, what else would you like to see? What needs to happen next to, as you say, organize and further improve the industry?
I would expect to see riders and drivers being brought into the formal economy. Training would definitely help. And the guidelines that RTA has issued is definitely in the right direction. We see a lot of points being covered. And we engaged, all stakeholders are engaged with RTA in improving the entire process.
Thank you so much for joining us and for taking those listener questions this morning. We do appreciate it. Ravi Tharoor, Chief Strategy and Commercial Officer of the last mile delivery company Geebly, speaking to us on what has become our big talking point of the morning. The messages keep rolling in, and please do keep them coming, 4001, or you can message us for free using the ARN Play app. Easy to download. People are talking about the responsibility and where it lies for safe delivery, whether that's with the drivers, whether that's with the companies, direct or indirect, third party or having their own drivers, I mean by that, or whether it is with us, the consumers, who have grown to expect everything in about 4.5 minutes for next to no cost. Are we creating our own problem there?
Digital disruption in the UAE with Dubizzle.
The latest buzz in the world of technology and innovation with the UAE's latest homegrown unicorn.
Indeed, an opportunity for us to touch base with all the team at Beaut and Dubizzle. And today we want to talk all things data. Data analytics, big data. It's all about the data fundamentally. And as we move into a more digitally powered world, data, I think it's fair to say, is one of the most important resources at our disposal. But how do you use it? How do you use it responsibly, ethically and efficiently? Well, the person that can help us with that is, of course, the head of business intelligence at Beaut and Dubizzle, who joins us now live on the line and also, happy to say, live via Microsoft Teams. It is, of course, Antonello Sapino. Good morning to you, Antonello.
Good morning to you, Tom, and nice to speak here on Dubai Eye today. As you mentioned, we are going to discuss how data is being used by Dubizzle, Beaut, and the other companies within the EMPG group, but we will be mostly focusing on Dubizzle today.
Yeah, so we're going to obviously look into that in just a few moments. Before we go any further with that, though, Antonello, I think it's only fair for me to say, first and foremost, congratulations to Italy for winning the Euros.
Yeah, thank you very much. I would say Bonucci did a very good game, and I watched it to the end in Wembley. It was really, really amazing. I'm so happy about that. Thanks, Tom.
Let's get back to the data now. How big a role is data playing in decision making these days when it comes to business?
As we move into a more digitally powered world, data is one of the most important resources at our disposal, and we can leverage it to create business intelligence and drive decision making. Just before, you actually mentioned, you know, oil is $75 per barrel, and I do believe that actually data is the new oil today, and its value, it's just going up and up for any kind of company, whether it is a startup or a well-established enterprise. I do believe that a company needs to base the decision on data consistently in order to be successful over the long term. Data can be messy when you collect it, and it's really about having the team and the technology to clean it, to make it available for different stakeholders at all levels within the company, but also outside of the company in an aggregate way, so that everybody can take advantage of it. For example, when it comes to external usage of the data that we do, we publish market reports. We just published recently a property half report, but we did publish consistently reports for property, for cars, and we have been active on the press. And this data can be basically used also by our user, because they can see where prices are going up, where prices are going down by community or by car, make, model.
So give us an example, if you can. You're talking there about data-backed decisions. I mean, if you take Debizzle, for example, if you look at what some of the trends are at present, what does it tell you, but also tell us?
We do have a lot of data, and let me try to think about the most interesting trends. Let me just say that whatever I say, I will say is highly representative, because so far our database, it's basically one of the largest after the merger. We do have an historical number of registered users, like 30 million. So what does data tell us? Let's start from property. It is hot in Dubai, right? It's 40 plus degree. I would say that in general, lots of people are looking for chill-free apartments or houses, villa with a swimming pool. That's in trend with what's happening in the Dubai summer. And in terms of prices, I would say some luxury community like Palm or Arabian Ventures are doing really, really good. The market is growing for property, right? And that's really great. When it comes to cars, I would say the brands that are the most in demand, clearly BMW, Mercedes, Lexus. Let me say also that in our motor sections, we, apart from cars, we also have other items such as boats. I would say that jet ski are really, really in demand at the moment. You might not expect it, but we do have a jet ski market on Dubizzle. When it comes to electronics, we do have a very active and nice section about mobile phones. iPhone 11, X Pro, and the 12 are highly in demand as of now. And also the Samsung S20 and 21, we have a very good market, lively. Laptops as well are in demand, mostly gaming laptops. I do see a lot of demand for also MacBook Pro and Smart TV and Bose and JBL. Those are some of the highlights of what's trending now on Dubizzle. So I'm mostly referring these kind of insights, looking back only at the last 30 days, right? Because data has been really representative of how the UAE market has been doing throughout history. So that actually was very, very well represented by the data that we do have available.
Yeah.
And Janelle, I'm just going to quickly throw something at you, because we're very big on on proxy data here on the Business Breakfast, having a look at the numbers we've got to try and tell us what's happening, for example, with the population. And as you say, you guys have got a wealth of data of who's buying houses, selling houses, buying coffee tables, selling cars. What sense do you get about what's happening to the population here based on what people are buying and selling?
Well, I would say the feeling is positive. Dubizzle only, we have almost 4 million active visitors a month. After the pandemic, during the lockdown, as Haider mentioned, data showed a little dip, but everything is going up. The business in the UAE is it's booming again. Everything is at all-time high in all line of business. There seems to be a recovery, a very strong recovery of the UAE in line with the vaccination campaign and all the great things that are happening around. Everything is open. So everything is really, really positive. We are also running a lot of experiments into the business, as Harris mentioned, about delivery. We try to continue to solve problems, and the problems that we are trying to solve now is just to make people more comfortable. The market looks very, very healthy. Just in both the demand and supply, of course.
Antonella, just to wrap up, just to conclude, we've got about 30 seconds left as well. So is it your opinion that data can help businesses to make the right decisions and potentially pivot as well? As I said, about 30 seconds.
Yeah, absolutely. This is what also is clearly stated by the Abu Dhabi Sustainability Week Skills and Report 2030. All those professions around AI, robotics, business intelligence, analytics, they're all fueled by data, and this is what it is needed at the market right now to make it successful, to pivot new business models, to develop the company, to develop the economy, and make every type of individual, whether it is a company or a business, successful in the future.
Yeah.
And in the UAE, of course.
Antonello, lovely to chat with you this morning. Really appreciate it. Antonello Cipino is the head of business intelligence at Beaut and Debizzle.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. to enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.